The 9 till noon show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union, with monster loans available up to €60,000 for all occasions. Visit letterkennycu.ie. The county's number one talk show, The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, very good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 17th of January, 2023. How are you keeping? I do hope you're well on this wintry morning across the Northwest. Maybe some of you normally listening in the radio or, in the car, on the radio, or at work, or listening to us from home today. Well, it's good to have you on board. Now, don't forget, Lee did a great job keeping everyone updated with what's happening across the region as it relates to weather. I think we know what's happening school-wise now. But if there's any information you wish to get out there to your fellow man and woman, 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Emails to comments at highlandradio.com. And did you know, maybe you're listening for the first time, if you didn't get into work, you can watch the show on your big screen. Go on to the YouTube app and type in Highland Radio Ireland. Watch us there. The same with Facebook Watch across Facebook, and also on our website. Just click Watch Live on the website there. Okay, let's go on to the newspapers. Not all in today, as you can imagine, maybe some issues in terms of delivery, but let's start with what we have. The Derry Journal this morning: injured woman's family prays true spirit of Derry. Relatives of a woman who was injured in a suspected gas explosion have praised the swift action of neighbours who came to her aid. Emergency services were called to the scene in the Kylemore Park area of the city on Saturday. One woman was taken to hospital and her family have confirmed that she's in a stable condition in the Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast. We wish her a full and speedy recovery. On to the Irish Independent now this morning. He's goosed if it gets worse. Pascal Donoghue on thin ice over money row, but Fianna Fáil to back him for the time being. Fianna Fáil will back Pascal Donoghue over his failure to declare election donations as long as there are no further revelations about the public expenditure minister. They must be confident there isn't. Mr. Donoghue has been engulfed in controversy since it emerged he failed to declare services which were paid for by his friend and engineering firm chief executive, Michael Stone. Tánaiste Micheál Martin weighed in behind the minister, saying he had given a thorough explanation for not declaring that Mr. Stone paid for posters to be erected and taken down during the 2016 general election campaign. However, there are concerns within Fianna Fáil over the revelations, which have resulted in Mr. Donoghue recusing himself from any work related to the Standards in Public Office Commission while the watchdog investigates him. That story also covered in the Irish Daily Mirror. Progress it slightly. The businessman who paid people to hang election posters of Pascal Donoghue was appointed to the board of the Land Development Agency by former Housing Minister Owen Murphy. Probably a coincidence. However, the Public Expenditure Minister has insisted he did not recommend Michael Stone for the position on the state body. A spokesperson for current Housing Minister Dara O'Brien confirmed to the Irish Mirror the LDA ordinary board member fee is set at $15,750 a year. But the agency stated Mr. Stone has waived the remuneration fee since the outset of his involvement with the agency and does not claim expenses. Mr. Stone is the owner of Dublin-based engineering company Designer Group. So the plot thickens. Right, okay, just to let you know, we've a note in from Donegal County Council here. Traffic should avoid the Century Hill Cathedral area, New Line Road and Ard O'Donnell areas of Letterkenny, by the way. Roads are in a poor condition due to snow. Donegal County Council crews are working to improve driving conditions and clear the main artery roads through the town. So a note from the council: please avoid the Century Hill Cathedral area, New Line Road and Ard O'Donnell areas of Letterkenny because of the snow. And driving through Letterkenny today, ironically, because it's the urban part of my trip, actually driving on snow, whereas the roads were relatively clear. The main roads were relatively clear coming up through Barnes Moor Gap. Let's go to the Irish Times now. Free GP care for all would cost £881 million and could be rolled out by 2026, ERSI says. But the Institute warns there may not be enough family doctors to meet extra demand a free system would generate. Now, this is no slight towards GPs. We're under a great deal of pressure, as you can imagine. But already at this time, there is difficulties with many of you out there in terms of getting an appointment. We had a lady who had a kidney infection earlier in the week, couldn't get an appointment till Wednesday. To get antibiotics, presumably to get antibiotics. And we all know, particularly over the Christmas period, as I say, I presume the GPs are doing their absolute best, but the difficulty in accessing them. Now, I'm not saying anyone would exploit or abuse the system, but if it's free to visit your GP, you can only imagine the increase in numbers. And there are statistics that back that up, by the way. Even when you make it free for younger people, the workload increases greatly. So I don't see in any scenario, and with all the money in the world, how the current GP setup could accommodate all of these extra visits that would inevitably come. That being said, I know nothing, and we're going to be speaking to, hopefully we're going to speak to a representative of GPs a little later on to find out the reality of the situation from their perspective, because there is a shortage of GPs. We have GPs working in this county who would far prefer, I'd imagine, to be retired, but have a duty to their customers and to their clients and their patients, really is the word, isn't it, to stay on working because there's no one to step into their shoes should they vacate them. Well, free GP care could be introduced for the entire population within 3 years at a maximum cost to the state of $881 million, according to this new research. Providing access for all to a family doctor would reduce the amount people spend on GP services each year from an estimated $467 million to $95 million, according to the Economic and Social Research Institute. And as I say, it feels sometimes when reading these words, it's like we're living in an alternative reality. But the ASRI warns that there may not be enough GPs to meet the extra demand a free system would generate as the population ages and as it grows. And I suspect it can't. Right, the Irish Daily Mail tells us that rural TDs and hotel industries are gearing up to fight a plan to bring in a new Dublin hotel room tax. A report released yesterday shows that tax on overnight accommodation could raise more than $12 million a year for cash-strapped capital. Kerry TD Michael Healy-Ray last night vowed to fight it vehemently in the Dáil and said Dublin would be killing off the golden goose if it tries to charge rural people even more for staying in Dublin. The proposal has broad support among Dublin councillors, who see it as a way out of the city's budget hole and a way to fix the crime-ridden north in a city without losing support from local residents. The idea of a 1% hotel tax was first proposed by the State Commission on Taxation and Welfare and is backed by yesterday's Dublin City Council report. I can understand where Michael Healy-Ray is coming from, but Dublin hotels seem to just gouge us whenever anyway. Does 1% make any difference? You know yourself. If there's a big football match or a concert coming on, the price of the rooms go through the roof. I don't want to say it's all, but it feels like all. Does 1% really matter? And be honest with you, I've never gone to Dublin for fun, really, ever, to stay in a hotel. So it doesn't affect me, so I am nonplussed. The 1%, they stick on so much, as I say, for a football match or a concert. Does 1% matter? And as I say, I'm not there any other time anyway, so it doesn't really bother me. My concern would be that a lot of people, tourists, for example, when they're coming to Ireland or planning to come to Ireland, that they just Google Dublin. You know what I mean? I don't think they might see the nuances of a cheaper West Coast, a more beautiful West Coast, a cheaper Northwest. You know, maybe people just Google the price of a car or a hotel in Dublin and go, I'm going to France or Germany or Holland or somewhere. Do you know what I mean? So that would be a concern. I just wish we were doing more to promote Ireland outside of Dublin, because I would say it's the same with people who wouldn't know Portugal. They'd just price Faro and see what the situation is there without knowing the various prices that could be around different parts of the country. Sad news from the world of entertainment, but it's not just entertainment, because Christy Dignam is very well known, and I would say lots of you have seen him in concert. I'd say lots of you have chatted to him. I'd say lots of you have taken pictures, because such is his friendly way of going on, but also the fact that the Aslan have been playing for so long that a lot of people have had access to him over the years. Well, Christy Dignam's Aslan bandmates have said they're devastated as their frontman receives palliative care at home. Christy, who's just 66, spent 6 months in hospital from July last year year until December, and since then has been cared for at home by his family, including wife Catherine and daughter Kira, and carers since December. The Crazy World hitmaker has been battling amyloidosis, a rare blood disorder, since 2013. And Aslan stars Billy McGuinness, Joe Jewell and Alan Downey, who Christie has shared the stage with for 40 years, said they have no words after Christie's latest health update. The heartbroken trio confirmed yesterday all further shows are cancelled, saying it's been a tough road for them all. And hopefully... Well, there's no doubt that his... maybe you've got memories to share of Aslan, by the way, or of Christie. You can do, of course. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts, or call us on 074 91 25,000. An amazing performer. Kind of, it was a bizarre situation in that I was working in a place years and years ago, and they used to put music on before the DJ started. But Aslan were booked for one night, and it wasn't very well advertised, and people didn't know it was happening effectively. So it was a very, very, very small crowd, and it was only a small crowd, not because of their popularity, but because people literally didn't know. And I think there was probably 15 people. I'm going from memory, but it's a really, really small crowd. But anyway, Aslan came up on stage, and he came out, was the lead singer, and did the show as if there were 7,000 people there. It was really quite remarkable. It was exactly as if the place was absolutely wedged. And as I say, it wasn't busy through no fault of their own. It was just I'd need a wee while longer to explain how it ended up the way it was. But anyway, he did his show and all those. And I was like one of, there was certainly no more than 20 there. And I was one of 20 people that I was working there at that time. And as I say, he put on the full show as if the place was wedged. A consummate professional. So we wish him all the best. All right, that was a run through the newspapers for this morning. We are going to be introducing our first guests onto the show very shortly. Just to remind you once again of the telephone numbers, 07491 25000. Caroline Orr's back after her birthday celebrations with Donna Marie. And also you can WhatsApp and text 086 60 25000. Now, David Fisher is Oakfield Park Managing Director. Good morning to you, David. How are you keeping?
Morning, Greg. I'm good.
Good stuff. Things are okay. All right. Now, but some changes with, well, it's almost quite a big proportion of the county's railway stock, if you look at it like that, I suppose. What's changed at Oakfield Park? Oakfield Park, I beg your pardon.
Well, I suppose one of the major changes now in the next couple of months is the move from coal to an alternative fuel for the steam locomotive. So that's something we're investigating, as the, I suppose, we're the only steam railway for a long way, and want to keep it that way. Renewable.
And are there viable alternatives, or is it exploratory at this stage?
It's exploratory at this stage. There are alternatives. I mean, there are about a dozen heritage railways across the country, and a number of them have steam locals and are investigating a similar thing. There are 150 heritage railways in the UK, and they used to burn 26,000 tonnes of coal every year. So we're all in the same situation. Most of the railways would have got their coal from Wales, and one of them Welsh steam coal, very specific, because these locals are very, very fussy in what they burn. You can't just get coal anywhere for them. They're designed for specific coal, so we have to trial now a number of different options to keep the sort of the heritage feel and keep the smoke and the steam and the sound. You know, we're not going all electric or anything, but something a lot more renewable.
And I suppose it's the right thing to do, isn't it? But also, too, it's maybe an attractive, for, you know, people who would be like-minded in terms of the environment and what have you. It's going to be another feather in your cap in attracting in attracting crowds.
Yeah, it is the right thing to do. It's another thing. It's another thing on the list of what we're trying to do. From an ecological point of view, we have a kind of a holistic approach, from wildflower meadows to wetlands to all sorts of things. And it's another thing like that, and you know, you could argue an exemption for heritage railways to continue burning coal, and ship it in from Colombia or somewhere, but that's not the right approach. I think we take the opportunity now to move forward.
And, I mean, are there alternatives that others are using that you can look at to see if they work with your stock, or is this something that you kind of have to somewhat start from scratch in terms of finding this alternative?
I've been speaking to a few railways that would have a similar steam local. That'll be the first step, and we do have a couple of alternatives we're going to trial in the next couple of months before we open again. And take it from there. We hope that we find an Irish provider. That's the first thing. And I think we will, and I think it'll largely come from biowaste or food waste. Mm. But it is that you do have to try it. If you don't have enough heat, you don't move at all. If you have too much heat, you're burning out tubes and boilers and grates and everything. So it's trial and error.
Nothing's easy, is it?
No, it's just one of the many things.
All right. Well, Listen, keep us updated, David. Thanks for that. Lovely to chat to you. 0860 25000 WhatsApps and texts. Right. And you're using that number for us, of course, as always. Just letting you know, Maples in Lismonahan is like a sheet of glass. Be careful. Could you send someone to salt it? Well, we can't, but we can certainly put it on to... we can certainly help the council are listening there. Let me see. Mental health clinic held in the community hospital in Carndonagh is being cancelled today due to weather. We've had a couple of inquiries as it relates to hospital appointments, but we've been given no advice in that regard. The road from Polestar roundabout into Neil T. Blaney Road to Dunn Stores isn't great. Cars are spinning there. Hi, Greg. Just to say, some schools need to text a bit earlier in the morning, because if I had to go out this morning, I would have been on the way to school with children when we heard it was closed. Not fair, I think. It's a tough one. And to be honest with you, I'm in the same boat as you. I had to make a call this morning at... when I say make a call, I don't mean make a phone call. I had to make a decision this morning before 7 o'clock. And then I got the notification at 8:15. Now, if I hadn't have made that decision, things would have got complicated. Not in a life and death situation, but I hear you. But I do also understand perhaps the... I do understand the difficulty for schools. Hi, Greg. Can I ask if anyone knows anything about cross-border workers living in the south and working in the north and issues around working remotely? Workers will no longer be able to work from home for more than 30 days a year because of tax implications. Could you raise this on your show to see if there's anyone who could shed some light on this issue and possibly get a work around it? Sorry. Don't apologise. It's good to have you contacting us. Right, so... A cross-border worker living in the south, working in the north, and issues around about remote working. They're no longer able to work from home for more than 30 days a year because of tax implications. Right, okay. There is a huge cross-border working community. If anyone can help, please let us know. Greg, I do a lot of driving with my job. I've noticed a good number of Ukrainian registered cars on the roads. Are these car drivers subjected to the laws of our land? NCT insurance, full license. Would love to know what would happen if there was an accident involving one of these cars. That was raised months ago, and a local sergeant said, and I don't want to misquote it, that the laws of this land had been related very clearly to the car owners. There was some chat going around a few months ago that they'd carte blanche, that they could just drive through checkpoints, that there was no enforcement whatsoever. I've been told by a member of the Gardaí that that's not the case, and that their liabilities have been made very clear to them. Okay. Can you give Jared McKay from Drumquin a happy 50th birthday? He's a big fan of the show. Well done, Jared. From your best friend, Eamon and Brendan, have a wonderful day. Now, I hope he is a big fan, Eamon and Brendan, and you're not taking the hand. But anyway, Jared, a big happy birthday to you. Right, okay. It seems in this, everywhere you look, there's examples of, you know, different treatment for people living in different areas of the country, and there's a big example of that coming up on the way. Right, it's very possible that you may have missed news that emerged over Christmas. Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, said right over Christmas that he intends to offer 100% redress to fund repairs to so-called defective Celtic Tiger homes in a scheme that could cost up to $2.5 billion. While any scheme would be subject to Cabinet approval, which we expect to be given tomorrow, Mr O'Brien told the Irish Times that he wanted the state to fund the works. Asked in a pre-Christmas interview if he expects to be able to offer 100% redress to people affected by defective Celtic Tiger builds, he said, "That's my intention." Now, you might remember there was pressure being put on him during an interview to deliver on that, and it was put to him that he'd sorted Donegal. What about these Celtic Tiger? Well, they're apartment blocks, effectively, and he nodded as if he had sorted Donegal out, and then suggested he hoped to do the same. Now, that's expected to be signed off on Wednesday. Right, so why are predominantly Dublin-based apartment blocks and houses being given full 100% redress with no cap? Yet things are very different here in Donegal. I pose that question to Eileen Doherty, a defective block homeowner and former member of the government-appointed working group. But there's no logical answer to that, is there, Eileen? And good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Yes, you can hear me okay?
Yeah. Loud and clear.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's exactly the question that we want asked of Minister O'Brien. We saw these reports coming out over Christmas and again over the last few weeks where it's apparently going to go to Cabinet for approval tomorrow. So, I mean, it really is absolutely astonishing that we would seem to be treated so differently up here in the Northwest and in the defective block scheme than this new legislation that's coming through tomorrow. Now, the first thing I'd say is that we obviously would say that anyone who is affected by a defective apartment or home is entitled to 100% redress. Let's be very clear. We absolutely would welcome
fair play to them. It's great
the right
for them.
Thing to do. However, on the other hand, I mean, if you go back to even last year and over the last few years where we have been absolutely saying we deserve to get 100% of the cost of our homes fixed. And we have had so much pushback from within the working group, for example, which I was a member of, where we literally spent 3 months, I mean, every single time we met with the department and liaison with them, really having to push really, really hard for any element of the scheme which came close to 100%. So to think that this now is going through, there's hardly been a word about it. There hasn't been a working group. They really haven't been in the media talking an awful lot about it. I mean, this scheme is likely to cost, as you say, up to €2.5 billion. We're talking about 100,000 defective, potentially, apartments that are affected. But again, predominantly closer to the capital. So we would ask why it's astonishing that we seem to be treated so differently. And to give you some of the information that has been leaked, and again, we don't have the memo, so we don't have the definitive document.
Well, they've tried to keep a lid on it. I think listeners should be made aware that this was coming down the tracks and they tried to keep a lid on it for whatever reason. But yet here we are talking about it. Go ahead, Eileen.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. I would 100% agree. I mean, there's been very little information in the local media, national media, even about this. They're trying to get it through and rubber stamp tomorrow in Cabinet without having very much discussion about it. The things that have been leaked are things like possibly retrospective payment. Now, for any family who has already done repairs on their homes, in the Northwest, for example, in Donegal, we have been fighting for this for years, that if you have already done some repairs in your home, you should be entitled to claim back the cost of those repairs. We've always been told that was absolutely not going to happen and that you may give up on that course of sort of a strategy in terms of getting your home the money back. However, it would seem that this is something they're considering under the scheme, that they will retrospectively fund repairs that have been made. That's unbelievable. The owners of properties obviously are going to be entitled to claim, as are landlords. Again, something we had to fight so hard for. Now, apparently, the complexes are being remediated on a complex-by-complex basis. Now, the actual implications of that, too, Greg, are interesting, because if you think about apartment complexes, what happens is on the bottom floor, you tend to have commercial properties. Now, you remember and you'll be well aware that commercial properties are not a part of our scheme. So we would be asking, are those commercial properties as part of the scheme going to be able to avail of funding to fix their properties? If they are, they certainly cannot expect commercial property owners here to sit idly by.
But also, too, there are some apartment blocks here, right? Do they go into that scheme? I mean, they're small in number. Do they go into that scheme?
Yeah, I would imagine they probably can, to be honest with you, Greg. I don't know the details. Again, we haven't seen the memo. But I think we're just, if we come back to the principle, I think, of this scheme versus the principle of the defective block scheme and how we're being treated, I think what we're ultimately saying is we absolutely will be demanding fairness. Now, we've been saying this in terms of pirate for the last number of years. But I mean, for a scheme like this, by the way, which they are developing based on primary legislation. Now, the implications of that for us are that if you look, go back to the working group, we asked for new primary legislation to be developed for the defective block scheme, because the issue we have with foundations is basically one of the reasons we have that issue is because the existing scheme is based on an old, what they call, legislative vehicle. And if we completely demolish the house, it's no longer a grant. It has to be. So basically, we have a lot of problems from the fact that we inherited an existing legislative vehicle.
Yeah, but I think where there's a will, there is a way. You know, they managed to seemingly do this all very, very quickly. Legislation exactly. wasn't an issue. Now, there's going to be a very... Well, there should be a very difficult atmosphere around that cabinet table, because we have our own minister at that table, Charlie McConlogue, who sat at that table as this current enhanced scheme was signed off. It's the best I could do. You know, we'll hopefully improve it and so on and so forth. And he's going to have to sit at the same table tomorrow as Dara O'Brien proposes a 100% redress scheme for Dublin properties with no cap, with retrospective payments. And to go, right, okay, I'll sign, you know, I'm not going to go against it. I'll back that too. I mean, if I were Minister McConlogue, I'd be kicking up a stink here, because it doesn't look very good for him.
Absolutely. I mean, we're in a privileged position that we have Minister McConlogue around that cabinet table tomorrow. But again, we need to ensure that Minister McConlogue is willing to speak up on behalf of people who are affected by the defective block scheme. I mean, his office is in the epicenter of this crisis. I mean, this is absolutely an opportunity for the minister to say to his cabinet members and to the Taoiseach that we will not accept and he cannot rubber stamp a scheme where we are treated so differently. So I think we have got to expect that the minister will do that on behalf of his constituents. I think it's the least we can expect. The fact that we haven't heard anything from the minister on this is quite surprising. And I would expect that he will be coming out tomorrow talking about how he has stood up for the people of, I suppose, and has shown, and for anybody affected by the defective blocks crisis.
Right, so we're on a motorway here. We're stuck in the slow lane. Trundling our way to a destination really that we don't know how far into the future it is, and flying down the fast lane on the left is this scheme for Dublin based properties. What next? I mean, do we keep just going, oh, it's not fair, you know, trying to chip away, you know, there's clearly an intent to fix the situation in Dublin, and certainly not an intent to fully fix the problem. What do we do next? And it's not just Donegal, of course. There's at least 13 other counties affected by this, right? What happens next to this campaign then? Because we were speaking to Lisa not so long ago about the problems that there is with this enhanced scheme as it is. You know, we're still trudging along here in the slow lane. And as I say, we've got this other situation. And fair play to them. They're our fellow country people. I have no issue with their houses being fixed, and I'm delighted to be contributing to it. But what do we do next here? I mean, do we just sit and take it?
Well, I mean, I think that's why, if you think about the work that Joe Morgan, for example, is doing with the EU, I think that really highlights the importance of work such as that, Greg. For example, if you think about this as in terms of fairness, in terms of equality, in terms of human rights, it really highlights the importance of that work, which Joe is actually working really hard on the background. He's getting a lot of very positive feedback from his engagement with the EU. So that's, again, another reason why we have really unfortunately lost a lot of faith in our national politicians in regard to this. So I think we just have to start really looking outside of Ireland to really highlight this issue. And this will definitely be something we will be looking at and sharing with them as well, to say, look, what can we do? I mean, ultimately, I think we just have to keep working with all of the parties and putting the pressure on them. But it's incredibly frustrating to hear that news over Christmas, that this scheme has pushed through now in early January. I mean, the other thing that I didn't mention is they're also talking about, as part of this new scheme, of introducing emergency legislation once it's rubber stamped at cabinet. emergency legislation to ensure that they are on the ground checking that these properties are safe and so on. I mean, it just the difference is unbelievable. The amount of families you'll probably have seen over the last few weeks putting pictures up of how damaged their homes are, water running down walls. Where is the interim legislation for us? I mean, the stark difference is quite unbelievable. And we would just say we won't be accepting it. We
but
will
you see,
be.
The thing that is... The logic to it, right, and this is what we're going to be told, so it's almost not worth tuning in to all the debates because this is what we're going to be told, is that it's probably going to cost somewhere around about 25 grand per apartment to repair, right? 100,000, ramp it up to 2.5 billion. But they're allowing very generously, what they'll have us believe, 420 of a cap here. And we know it's not really 420 by the time, you know, between the jigs and the reels. And that will be the argument. And then what will happen is we'll look like, you know, greedy, you know, Donegal moaners. And the Dublin folk will look like, you know, well, they'll just, they're really pleased to get anything, really. But the truth of it is that, you know, it's no one's fault. And how can you put a cap on you know, how can you put a cap on a situation like this? Yes, of course, it's cheaper per unit, but that's not really fair.
No, it's not. And actually, to be honest with you, Greg, they have come out with a statement to say in and around they estimate €25,000 per unit. Okay. However, they've also put a caveat in there in that release to say, however, some will be a lot more. So that reality is they don't have a clue how much they're going to cost per unit, no more than they have a clue how much each of our homes is going to cost to remediate. And I think that's put in there deliberately to develop the same narrative that they have over the last couple of years, which is that, you know, it's all about the money and we're looking to have so much, it's costing so much more for our scheme. So, but if you come back to the principle is that they did nothing wrong. Their homes are defective. We've done nothing wrong. Our homes are defective. It was a lack of governance. And therefore, the government have a responsibility to step in and fix this. And if they give them 100% redress with no cap, we deserve the same treatment.
Yeah. And again, you, me, and I'd say everyone's listening, delighted that these people are being looked after. All we want is equal treatment. And the treatment is equal. The cost is irrelevant. It's equal treatment, you know. And if the bill is bigger for Donegal and the rest of the counties, well, that's not really the issue here. It's about fairness and treating people equally. But sir, we'll just have to see. It's going to be interesting, as you mentioned there, just to see what happens around that cabinet table tomorrow. Eileen, as always, thanks for your time. It's great to speak to you. Thank you. Take care. Okay. Eileen Doherty there, defective block homeowner. Former member of the government appointed working group, and that's going to be signed off on tomorrow. And as I say, happy days, but what about us? Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather joins us now. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so we woke up to what some might see as a winter wonderland across the northwest this morning. Others see it as an absolute nightmare. Schools closed, people's not able to get to work, and proper snow. It's very rare, you see, certainly around here, proper snow at all levels.
Yes, indeed. The temperatures have been well below for most of the country, but the northwest has seen the bulk of the showers. And I had reports from right across Donegal last night of snow falling, and obviously a lot of people this morning waking to a covering of snow. The temperatures do vary a lot across the county. Malin Head is actually 2 degrees at the moment. Raphoe is -2 degrees. So it does vary a lot. And then just over the border in Castledurg, it's -5 degrees. So there is still a bit of variance. So you could see some sleet on the coast, very close to the coast, but certainly more snow is very likely for many parts of Donegal through this afternoon, this evening. And as you mentioned in the update, a risk of some thunder. So we could see some very rare thunder snow, which sounds very dramatic. It's just thunder and snow at the same time. But it can lead to some quite heavy snowfall, which could unfortunately cause some more accumulations. And a yellow warning has been issued by Met Éireann actually in the last 15 minutes to cover a snow ice warning for Donegal, Leitrim and Sligo.
Yeah.
And that's right up until 9 o'clock. Tomorrow morning.
The all weather warnings are a wee bit weird though, because you know this is just it's really difficult to get around up here. There is snow everywhere. Maybe not Malin. Ali Farron and the crew up there must have the radiators at full blast, but for the rest of the county anyway, you know, it's particularly on the main roads, but off the main roads in towns, you know, in towns and villages, this feels red. It's got red written all over it, Alan. But I suppose, you know, it changes from region to region, you know, within regions.
It does, and I think some people might have a little chuckle that the warning has been issued this morning after they've got out of bed and saw that there was enough snow that they couldn't go anywhere. But I suppose this warning really is about what's to come. So It, unfortunately, the warnings very often don't take heed of the fact of what's already happened. So the fact that you already have lying snow and then you're going to have more possibly heavy snow coming on top of it. I mean, you could see some high accumulations where you catch those very heavy showers of snow. So I'd expect many areas will be very tricky by late this evening if they're not already. And temperatures staying cold right up until Friday. So there's going to be no quick thaw to the snow, at least. I mean, the cold spell in general is quite short. It's a week-long, working week. But temperatures staying quite low. So you are going to have tricky conditions again this evening into tomorrow.
So any precipitation over the next couple of days likely to fall as sleet or snow?
Yeah, it is likely to be sleet or snow. As I say, closer to the coast, it's likely to be sleet. There may be times where it may kind of oscillate between sleet and snow. But road temperatures and ground temperatures are still going to be cold. So even no matter if it is sleet that falls, it's still going to be treacherous underfoot and under tyres.
And general consensus that milder weather from Friday then?
Yeah, now it'll arrive in the southwest first. So it'll stay cooler in Donegal really right up until probably Friday evening. It's a little bit hard to call because it has been kind of dragging its feet a small bit. So it could even stay until Friday night. So it could well be Saturday morning before we see the real thaw, because temperatures in Donegal could stay maybe 3, 4, 5 degrees on Friday, which obviously won't give much of a thaw. So it could be Saturday before the northwest sees the real thaw.
All right, listen, Alan, thank you very much as always. Enjoy the rest of your week. Take care of yourself. Alan O'Reilly there of the Carlo Weather Channel, 086 60 25,000. A caller says, why did the housing minister underspend his budget by millions? Was it to make him look good? He couldn't spend it, is the issue, but it was at a level 300 or 400 million where it can be carried through to the next year, so he might see that as a success, more spending in there to make it look good in 2023. Hospital appointments are going ahead. I rang the hospital. I'm on my way to my appointment. Safe journey, and thanks for that. Schools just don't close willy-nilly. There's channels to go through before they make the announcement. Yes, of course, I understand that. But you see, maybe, for instance, if a red weather warning were issued timely, that would afford them the space to make that decision, because that means that the schools, they could make the decision to stay closed. Traffic moving fine through Melton Roads. They're clear of snow. Good to hear. Greg, the Burt Bingo's off tonight. Please read out. Kathleen, no problem. Burt Bingo is off. A huge thank you to the Errigal College team, who had messages out reschool closures at 7 a.m. this morning. The safety of the staff and students comes first. Hi, Greg. Does anyone know what the Buncrana to Letterkenny Road is like, as we have a funeral? Look, it's going to be a route that's treated. It's going to have snow. It's going to require care, but I imagine you'll get there. Hi, Greg. I can't seem to receive Highland Radio on Alexia anymore. We'll get back to that. Just say, give the speaker its command and say play Highland Radio, or play 103.3. It should work for you. It's asking you for $4.99 a month. It's not us. I wouldn't mind it, but it's not us. Right, John McAteer is editor of the Chicconnell Tribune. Good morning to you, Mr. McAteer. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. I'm keeping fine.
And how is the weather where you are?
Snow. I'm just looking out across the lake. It's a big blanket of snow. It's the heaviest I've seen in numbers of years, actually.
It's rare, isn't it, that we see real snow and real snow lie like this, John?
It's very rare out along the sea here, because I can't recall when I've seen this. The landscape is absolutely stunning. Mm. So I'm going to get a few pictures of it later on, because it's not going to lie that long, mind you.
Yeah, good content for the paper, and you don't have to travel too far. So tune in on Thursday, Wednesday night, Thursday for more. Right, John, Pascal Donoghue has found himself in a bit of a mess here, isn't he? He's got Fianna Fáil's backing. Pascal Donoghue failed to declare election donations, and as I say, Fianna Fáil will back him as long as there's no further revelations. You know, he holds himself up to a very high standard. In interviews, you dare not even question him at times, yet he finds himself having to explain himself with, a certain level of arrogance. How big a deal is this? How bad is this for Pascal Donoghue and the government?
It's not what they wanted at the start of a new parliamentary session, especially after the revelations about Damien English last week. Pascal Donoghue is very important man in Europe. He's the Minister for Public Reform, and that includes, I suppose, getting a new legislation in place for SIPO, or indeed, does he replace it? He has recused himself from all that. But, you know, this has come as no big surprise to Pascal Donoghue, because he's been subject to questioning from the Sunday Independent since last November. And he's in the headlines now on Saturday evening, all day Sunday, yesterday, and again this morning. I mean, he's goosed if it gets worse. Did you ever expect that that was appear in paper about probably one of the most respected members of the government? And it begs the question about whether you have SIPO or not. The truth is the function of politicians to provide clarity in filling in their forms. The public don't expect that much from politicians. Very basic things like a bit of trust and faith, clarity, transparency, and I suppose the ability to reassure the people that when they fill in a document of that kind, that it contains the truth and nothing else. It's not an awful lot to expect, and it's all about confidence and trust. Public confidence in politicians is quite low at the best of times. It's a lot lower right now, because over the last number of years, the government hasn't been seen to be delivering and functioning that well in relation to housing, to health. And as far as we're concerned up here in Donegal, we have a much bigger issue that I heard discussed just a little while back. And that is the issue of making. Mm-hmm. But getting away from all that.
So just in relation to Mr. Stone, who provided the van and the workers, and then went on to be appointed to the powerful Land Development Agency 3 years after he paid for Mr. Donoghue's posters to be put up. They're saying these things are unconnected, but it is. I don't know if it goes far as say it's a coincidence, but this is a man that's moving in political circles and now has an appointment, albeit one he's not claiming anything for.
I don't imagine that Michael Stone has anything at all to account for. He's a businessman. He has done some work for Pascal Donoghue. Pascal Donoghue, I think, was the man that opened his new offices some time back. None of that is wrong or anything like that, but that is all compounded and it becomes a focus of attention when it shouldn't. The issue isn't about Michael Stone. It's not about SIPL. It's not even about the Fine Gael constituency office that Pascal Donoghue has tried to hive this onto. It's about his own credibility and his own... I think it's sort of he's been in denial of this whole issue for the last couple of months, and suddenly it has come down on top of him. But it raises and begs another much bigger question that we don't know how many people are compliant with SIPL regulations. You know,
but the government has refused an audit of ministers and government representatives. I mean, I find that worrying.
Well, I find this worrying because, you know, it's not that long ago since the Taoiseach himself was in the eye of the storm when SIPO decided that because he was Taoiseach that he was outside of the remit for investigation. That raised a lot of eyebrows because if he's outside the remit, why is that so? Is it a fact then that the Taoiseach can act as he will and do as he will without any reference at all to the legislation governing SIPO and the standards in public office? It also begs the question this morning, is a senior minister of Pascal Donoghue's stature going to be also ruled to be outside of that remit? You have to ask that question.
And another thing too, John, what is going on in that, you know, some of the papers today are doing hit pieces on Sinn Féin to say that they did something similar, blah, blah, blah. And then I was listening to National Radio this morning whereby you had a presenter putting counter arguments as to why Pascal Donoghue did nothing wrong. I don't think that's what is going on there from a journalistic perspective there? Again, it's another thing that kind of to worries me. I don't think it's the job of a journalist to try and spin something positively for a politician. I don't think that's objective journalism. I don't think that's what that means. You know better than I.
Maybe we don't have all that objective journalism because the national media, to a great extent, and I've tried to explain this before, they're very heavily dependent these days on government advertising, which pays big bucks. It's a long time since I saw a piece in a national paper that didn't give an easy run to a senior government politician, let them be Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael or the Greens. It is always Sinn Féin is up there to blame for the snow that fell this morning. And I suppose that's not going to change. The independent group has always been very, very anti-Sinn Féin and pro-government. Sinn Féin is sitting back there. They've never been in government. They have nothing to answer for insofar as that is concerned. None of the mistakes made in government can be blamed on Sinn Féin. But you will find that if Pascal Donoghue and Damien English is asked to make statements in the Dáil this week, which I hope they will be, and that they will present themselves there for scrutiny by their colleagues, the attack is going to be on Sinn Féin and on nobody else.
I don't mind that in the Dáil. I get that in the Dáil. I just don't understand it in the media. And this is not a Sinn Féin, Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil thing. I just don't think the counterpoint to what someone is saying in an interview with a journalist, not to say, well, maybe he thought this and maybe he thought that. I just don't get it. John, I wish I had more time. I don't know why Caroline put you on so close to the 10 o'clock news. We'll have longer the next time, John. Always look forward to speaking to you. Thanks so much. Enjoy the snow. Get the camera out.
Thank you, Greg. Good
morning.
Have
a lovely one. Stay safe. John McAteer, the Tyrconnell Tribune, out on Wednesday night and Thursday. Right, 086 60 25,000. WhatsApps and texts to that number. Give us a call on 07491 25,000. Stay right where you are. We're back with loads more on the 9 till noon show, including Community Garda information, where you hear the news and appeals directly from Ungarda Shia Kana first here on the 9 till noon show. That and so much more besides coming up after 10.